You're listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston. The time is 6 o'clock. Please stay tuned for So What's Your Story with Dr. Hank Rubicek. His guest storyteller is Leona Hoogsberg. And the theme for today's program is Stories That Teach.
Steaming early Monday morning, and you're in a cool place that will help make everything today seem right because you've tuned into So What's Your Story on listener sponsor KPFT 90.1. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown. So What's Your Story puts the spotlight on soul-inspiring tellers, both pros and newbies, some of whom could be you, who engage us with revealing personal stories and beloved folk tales by taking us, alluring us on enchanted journeys and then returning us safely to the present. You know, a new school year is here, and with it an abundance of questions raised by parents about school supplies to school security. And parents should also ask questions about the ways in which skills, literacy skills, are taught in their school's curriculum. Because regardless of what any of us think, the most important subject in school isn't open for debate. It's English, with as much reading and writing that comes with it as possible. And reading stories that teach, the general idea behind required reading lists and the like, enhance learning even more. Choosing stories that teach a variety of lessons requires a more thoughtful deliberation than you might think. Even more pronounced is the important role reading plays in teaching our kids about positive character traits, how characters personify the human condition, and teach our children and wise adults how to behave, well, human. That's the learning seed we're going to grow this morning on So What's Your Story. And my guest, storytelling librarian and educator, Leona Hoogsberg, is the perfect person to guide us in this topic. She is a children's specialist at Kendall Library, part of Houston Library System, public library system. She loves books, children, acting, and especially storytelling. She has shared her stories with toddlers, preschoolers, and school-age children in libraries, bookstores, festivals, and parties for over 20 years. She uses props and songs and vocal animation, as well as infusing drama in her stories to create a kind of audience participation most could only envy. And because of her knowledge of children's literature, she connects the stories with the books from which they come and encourages children to read and tell their own stories. Leona is a member of the Houston Storytellers Guild and was a hit when she was a guest on this show when it was called Storytime on Open Journal. And she's kind enough to wake up at the crack of dawn to join us again. Good morning, Leona.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. Your navigation system got you here.
Yes,
right?
I made it just fine.
Coming like from San Antonio or something? You live in Springs.
Spring, yeah.
I'm just
which is bad enough.
Just exaggerating to make a point, right. You know, I think the role of a librarian has really changed over the years. And tell us what you do as a specialist, children's specialist at Kendall Library.
Well, at Kendall Library, my main focus is the kids, doing programs with them, from little toddlers, you know, starting them off with books up through school age kids. I have a book club where we read the book together and discuss it. I also bring in other teaching type things. We have programs I do with science and art and things like that. We also have, We do have video games and things like that, so the kids can have that side of learning also. And then a lot of it is also connecting the kids with books, especially finding kids that where they don't want to read and finding a book that'll kind of get them started to read.
That's wonderful. You know, reading really is an interactive process.
Oh, yeah.
So many people don't realize that. Now, your first story is an Aesop's fable, one of those short, colorful tales that has taught meaningful, common sense lessons for literally thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
What's your story?
It's Androcles and the Lion. Androcles was a slave. Owned by a cruel master, he worked from dawn till dusk with little food, and often he was beaten. Oh, it was a terrible life, and he didn't like it. It would be just as well that I were to run into the woods and be eaten by an animal than to stay here and be beaten every day. And so one day, Androcles saw his chance, and he ran into the forest, and he began to run and run, hiding from anyone who might catch him, and then stopping when he couldn't go any further. And so he did that all day, and finally, as it was the end of the day, he stopped beside a tree, and then he heard a groaning sound. He was curious, so he went around the tree, and there he saw a lion. Well, he almost ran away. It was such a fearsome thing. But the lion groaned again, and he thought, I should see what's wrong. And so, more full of pity than fear, he crept up on the lion, and not wanting to make him afraid, and saw that the lion was licking his paw with his huge tongue and biting at it with his sharp teeth. And then Androcles saw that there was a big thorn in the lion's paw. And so he crept up further until he came and took a hold of the lion's paw. And he pulled out the thorn so carefully. And then he wrapped the paw in a piece of cloth that he had torn from his own tunic. And the lion licked his hand. Well, then that day on, Androcles and the lion became friends. And they shared a den together. And each day the lion would hunt, and they'd eat the food together. And then at night, the lion would lay down at the head of the den and protect them both. But as things happened, it did not continue. One day, the lion went out to hunt, and there were hunters there, and they caught him in a trap, and he was taken away. And Androcles went out that day to find the lion, and he was caught by soldiers and chained and taken to prison. And he knew what was ahead. He knew that when slaves were caught, they were taken to the arena and killed by wild animals. And so he waited. And finally the day came, and he was dragged up the long tunnel and thrust into the huge arena. And there he looked up, squinting with the light, and seeing thousands of people all cheering, wanting his blood. And at the one corner was the emperor, who would also see him die.
Oh, I have lived a terrible life, and except for the time with the lion, I have had no joy. How will I make it now?
And as the gate clinked on the other side of the arena, he closed his eyes, for he knew the lion was coming to tear him apart. And so he waited. And nothing happened, except the people began to murmur. And he felt something on his hand. And he opened his eyes, and there, at his side, was a lion. His lion. Oh, he let out a cry of joy, and got down on his knees and wrapped his arms around the lion and put his head into his fur. "Oh, lion, it is you," he cried. And the people all cheered, and the emperor stood and he said, "Never have I seen such a thing. A slave that tames a lion?" "Well, your majesty," said Androcles, standing, "you see, this lion has been my friend for many years, since the day that I showed him kindness." And he told him the story. And the emperor said, "What a story that is. And it can only be that you and the lion must go free." And so they left and lived a good life together. And as all Aesop fables end, there is an ending that says, gratitude can be seen in anyone, even animals. And that's our story.
Thank you, Leona. Great. You know, it's a classic. It's an absolute classic tale. And you were talking about the ending, and these endings are called parables.
Parables,
right?
That's right.
And just so we understand, what is a parable? Tell our listeners what a parable is.
Well, I think a parable is a story with a lesson. Mm-hmm. And Aesop always ended it with kind of showing it in the story and then kind of bringing it to kind of conclusion with the...
Like with the tortoise and the hare, right?
Yes.
For example, right? Slow and steady.
Slow and steady wins the race. Yeah.
That's always a classic. That was wonderful. I want our listeners to know that you're telling the story, you're not reading the story.
Right.
And you tell it so well, you close your eyes and the story really unfolds, not unlike a personal story.
Sure.
And I think that's really the only way that you can tell these wonderful tales. And this is really the same as the line of the mouse, as most people know, except we're using a real person rather than another animal. And oftentimes fables have only animals that personify the human condition.
Yes, almost right. Most of the fables are just animals. Yeah,
yeah. And that's wonderful because we do learn about human characterization through these animals.
Yes,
Wonderful. So what's your story? Has been easing into the week, you know, and starting on September 5th, we're going to be starting on Thursday evening at 10 o'clock, kicking off the weekend. And I'm excited about it because I'll be able to speak then, because in the morning, who in the world can talk at 6 a.m., right? I don't even know who you are. I don't even know where we are. So I'm really looking forward to that. And only Laura Slavin, our engineer, is the only one up, and thank God for her, because of her, we're alive and well. You are listening to Stories That Teach on KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Hank Rubicek with our guest storyteller, Leona Holzberg. I know that your next story contains a very powerful parable as well, and as we just said, parables oftentimes teach us about human qualities important to possess. And you use the concept character education. Tell us briefly what that means before we get into this next story.
Well, for many years, schools and communities have seen that because of some of the bullying and the other problems in the schools, they've developed character training where each month they take a different character trait, whether it's kindness or courage, leadership, respect, and the school will focus on that. They'll have lessons in the classroom. They'll encourage the family to also teach these principles. And then I guess it also comes into the community at times. So so I thought that the stories is a wonderful way to connect that too.
Yeah. Now these stories, well, let's go ahead and listen to this. It comes from the Bible, right? Your next story is from the Bible.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and hear that first.
All right.
Please.
This is the story of the Good Samaritan. One early spring day, a short, stocky man was walking down the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. It was steep and rugged and rocky, but he didn't care, for he was excited. He was going to visit his brother there in Jericho and enjoy the nice warmth after a long winter of cold weather. He had a pack on his back and his cloak around him, and as he walked, he didn't think about that the road was a dangerous place. There were robbers around. He just hummed as he went. And then, suddenly, from the rocks jumped two robbers, and they knocked him down, and they took his cloak, and they began to beat him and kick him, and then they took the rest of his clothes, and they left him there bleeding and barely conscious. "Mercy, mercy," he cried as they ran away, but there was no mercy. And so he lay there, and for a while there was no one on the road. Finally, a priest came along. He was in a spotless linen robe with a high hat, and he was walking very straight and very holy, for he had been at Jerusalem for a whole week. He had been able to serve in the temple, and this time it had been a great task that he had got to do. And so now he was returning to home in Jericho, and he felt very proud and very important. So he's walking along, and suddenly he sees something on the road. "Oh my goodness, there is something bloody there. Oh, I cannot get near that. It would soil my robes. I must move over. I hope it is not a man. If it is, I will pray for him." And so he walked on, never even stopping to look at the poor man. Well, a little while later, along came a Levite. He, too, was dressed well, but in blue, with rings on his fingers. And he had also been in Jerusalem for the week. He had got to teach and learn and speak to important people, and now he was returning to tell his family and friends all that he had done. He was also returning because he had many things to do with his business there in Jericho. And so he walked importantly, though he looked left to right, making sure there was no one to rob him of his jewelry. And then he saw the bloodied man along the road, and he walked up and looked at him. "Oh, that is terrible, that someone should be robbed. Oh,
I hope there is no one around now. Oh, we must get better laws. We must have guards along the road. This is not the way it should be. I will look into this. And I will come send someone to help you. I cannot do it myself. I have a bad back. And so he, too, moved over and walked on and left the man barely conscious. Finally, a third man came, this time leading a donkey. The donkey was covered with all of his goods, for he was a merchant. He had been in Jerusalem. It was a Samaritan who had been in Jerusalem the last few days. He had not done well. No one wanted to buy his goods. They did not like him very much. But he was still positive, for he knew that some of the villages ahead would buy his goods, and so he would do well. But as he saw the poor man lying beside the road, he stopped his donkey and he ran to him. "My friend, what has happened?"
"Robbers,"
the poor man said. Well, the Samaritan took off his cloak and wrapped it and put it under the man's head. And then he ran back and he got wine and oil and bandages, and he began to try to help the poor man and gave him water. And then, lifting him up, he put him on his own donkey and led him down the road. Soon they came to an inn. "Innkeeper, help me, please." And they took the injured man off the donkey and took him to bed. And that night, the Samaritan stayed with the man, giving him water and food, and wetting his brow and taking care of him. Early in the morning, the Samaritan checked the man and then went out with his goods. "Innkeeper, here is the money that I owe you for this night, and this money is to take care of the man now, for he is not ready to move. And I will return in a week, and if I owe you anything else, I will pay it then. Thank you for your help. I must go. I am late for my appointments." And so the Samaritan left, leaving the injured man in good hands. And, you know, as we think of the story, we must also say, who was the neighbor? And would we take care of him as the priest or the Levite? Or as the Samaritan?
That's a beautiful story, and it poses a great question. We were talking about that wonderful Bible story, and you and I were talking before the show about apocryphal stories, mm-hmm. and how very powerful they are, and the Bible is filled with these apocryphal stories. They're very rich moral tales designed to emphasize a very specific trait, much like the character education that you were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. Of the central character. Mason Locke Weems, in A History of the Life and Death, Virtues and Exploits of General George Washington, wrote about young George chopping down the cherry tree to illustrate, really amplify, his uncompromising honesty. Because if George were in a position and his father were to say, "George, did you chop down the tree?" The idea is that George Washington would have been the kind of person to say, "Pa, I cannot tell a lie. I chopped down that huge cherry tree with my tiny little toy axe," or something like that. I'm exaggerating it to even make more of a point. But the idea is that there is truism to there, because mm-hmm. George Washington was an honest man. And making stories, creating stories to amplify that trait is what is so very important, right?
Right.
Absolutely. Now, the power to teach is a very important instrument, and you have a very short story about teaching.
Right. I just wanted to share a quick story. Mm-hmm. When I taught for a few years, and when I did my teacher training, I had to do like half a semester of student teaching. And so I loved the kids. They were fourth graders, and they were really funny and cute. I had one little boy that was loved to eat, and he said, "I want to be a teacher someday so I can get to have salad bar." So it was just a lot of fun. And I loved teaching the lessons, but I have the supervisor come in and they would say, "You did a good job, but you need to be meaner." So I tried to be mean, and I tried to not smile, and I would just kind of, you know, just kind of stress myself trying to be mean and trying to make them do what's right, and it was just terrible. And I got very stressed. In fact, I ended up, when my student teaching was done, I ended up getting shingles. I was so stressed.
Oh.
So I went into the teaching.
It might have been the salad bar.
Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah.
And so I went into the teaching, and I had a class of like 30 kids. Mm-hmm. And I had three kids that really were a challenge to me: Morris and Decretia and Brandon. In fact, Decretia, she was like an inch shorter than me, even though she was in fourth grade. So that was, she was about 5'8 or 5'9. But I had, I taught the kids, and but I had trouble with control and with being mean. So, but I thought, I really don't want to be mean. And then I finally realized that what I needed to do was to love the kids enough to give them the controls and the discipline they needed, so that as we had the better control and a quieter classroom, then they were able to learn more. And we went down the hall in a line, then they stayed safer. And even there with Morris, I had, he would throw up just to get attention. So what I decided to do was tell him, Morris, I don't want you to you're just not feeling well, so I'm going to keep you out of recess because we don't want you to get sick or out of recess. Well, he stopped throwing up because, of course, he wanted to go to recess. So I learned that being a teacher is loving your kids enough to make them obey.
That's a beautiful story. Now, I really don't want to go there, but Morris forced himself to throw up.
Just a couple of times.
I don't really even want to know how he did that.
I honestly don't.
I just want everybody to know that this is Hank Rubacek, and you are tuned into So What's Your Story, despite the fact that we have Morris, and with guest teller Leona Hoogsberg on KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, 89.7 in Huntsville, and 90.3 in Livingston. Leona, I know that you've taught before as well, and I want to ask your opinion about censorship.
Well, I think that
it's always bothered me.
Yeah, and a lot of there still is some schools where they say that that you shouldn't read the certain book. I think in the end it needs to be the parents and maybe do the censoring and expose children to the thing, what they think is right, because, I mean, they're the ones that are the most responsible for their kids.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just so bothered by that. Charles Eliot, an academic, Harvard president in 1869, said, and I quote, "The books that the world calls immoral are books that show the world its own shame." And that's why we tend to censor things. And I think that's very, very true. I do. I think that's so very true. But there's no questions that will ever be censored on Tip for Telling, a quickie segment, when we learn something about storytelling by answering a question sent to us by a listener. One listener writes, "Dr. Hank, I love So What's Your Story? I love you back for that." And this is Raquel from Houston. Thank you, Raquel. And she says, "I teach middle school English, and I do a unit on creative writing. I always have a hard time explaining ways to get my students to write descriptive personal narratives. And you do such a wonderful job explaining narratives." Well, now I'm just blushing, Raquel. Thank you. Okay, I was hoping that you had an idea for me. That's what she wants to know. Raquel, I think that once your students have identified the event about which they want to write, you want to make sure it's focused and manageable, meaning the event covers a very short span of time. You don't want them to write about something that's occurred over a long period of time. There has to be an element of focus, and I've said that on so many shows. Then have your students answer the following questions as they apply to the event they wish to describe. What I felt, what I saw, what I heard, and what I learned from the experience. This will teach them to draw from several of their senses and use some clear descriptors in their writing. And the result should be a set of more vivid narratives, I would think. But good luck, Raquel, and thank you so much for your question. If you have questions about storytelling, send them to me at Ruby, R-O-U-B-E-Y, .story@gmail.com. Again, that is R-O-U-B-E-Y, .story@gmail.com, and I will answer them on the air. And if you have stories you want to tell in 4 to 6 minute segments, and you'd like to be a guest on So What's Your Story, send me a quick blurb about that personal story or folktale you want to tell and send them to that same email address. Again, that's Ruby, R-O-U-B-E-Y, .story@gmail.com, and I'm going to respond to you as quickly as I can. And anyone can get all the tips for telling and listening to stories at the Houston Storytellers Guild Monthly Story Swap, held by the Houston Storytellers Guild on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at St. Andrew's House. We have a great group. Leona, you've been in those meetings, right? You've been
yes.
a long-time member. What a terrific group. And I never don't want anybody to ever be afraid to come and tell a story. We won't laugh at you that much.
No,
okay?
That's right.
We don't laugh at you at all.
No.
Not at all. Are you kidding? We are wonderful at describing stories and teaching stories and listening to each other and really giving each other wonderful, wonderful feedback. Leona, we're just about done. And in about 30 seconds, have you got any advice for listeners about the upcoming year and about reading? That's a tall order, a tough question, but have you got something to tell us?
Well, I think for, especially for parents, to read to your children and share stories about your family and all types of stories, because that's what connects us as people.
Yeah, and I think that's a beautiful thought. I know that's a hard question, but I wanted to wrap it up with some kind of notion about how reading does, in fact, connect the human condition.
Yeah, that's right.
And learning is an unbelievably measurable outcome from reading. Thank you, Leona, so much for getting up at this rooster-friendly time to share your insights and stories that teach. A textbook way to welcome another school year. So study hard and read often and learn from stories. And to all of you, make KPFT a part of your day every day. And to story lovers, join me next Monday at 6 a.m. And then, starting September 5th, doing double-double duty next week, tune in to So What's Your Story every Thursday at 10 p.m. and start your weekend off right. Stay tuned for Whole Mother, followed by Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Be good to each other. And always remember that it is never too late to live happily ever after.
Join KPFT starting Thursday, September 5th for a new evening lineup. The Progressive Forum stays at its regular home, 7 to 9 p.m. Longtime KPFT favorite People of Earth moves into Thursday evenings following the Progressive Forum from 9 to 10 p.m. And the new storytelling program, So What's Your Story, will air Thursday nights, 10 to 10:30 p.m. Glenn Urbach, host of The Other Side, departs to pursue other interests, but hopefully may return soon. Again, that's our new Thursday evening lineup starting Thursday, September 5th. The Progressive Forum, People of Earth, and So What's Your Story. And stay tuned for The Inner Side at 10:30 p.m. This is KPFT Houston.